Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
Hi, this is Adam Barrett. Welcome to an edition of Speaking of Reliability. I'm here with Fred. How's it going, Fred?
Hey, pretty good, Adam. Glad to be here.
Good. We're ready to do a continuation of our discussion that we got so into, we realized we ran over probably one of our longer episodes. And it was actually a good point to cut off there and then make it a second episode, because in the first one, we framed the problem, I think, pretty well. And so maybe now it's time to start brainstorming some solutions.
Right.
And the problem that we framed was the reliability objectives and goals and having them be held by the development team and what that looks like and how that doesn't happen. What occurs now is there's processes developed that upper management effectively has to monitor and push and, you know, regulate. And that becomes a burden to the design team, having these things that they're supposed to do. And that obviously doesn't work, because then you're doing things, even if you do them, the output is unlikely to be very helpful because you're doing it probably at the wrong time or just because it was prescribed. Maybe it wasn't even the right tool to do, but it's in the process. So
this is a more general problem than just reliability, Adam. You realize that there's I don't know, dozens and dozens of different corporate policies and directions. And when you get into a project, there's a whole book full of requirements. The part of the management team's role is to prioritize. These are the things that are we want to pay attention to. We're going to measure and monitor. Now, the team in general and the management team has a choice to align their behaviors and decisions and actions with what is truly important to the organization, right? Or they can align it to what they think it is. And it may not be coherent to the engineering teams of what's the direction. But I think that's true for reliability, where many organizations, reliability is important, it's critical to our customers and blah, blah, blah. And then they don't fund any samples for reliability work. They instruct the procurement organization to buy the components that just meet the requirements and have no margin for robustness and on and on and on. So there's this inconsistencies built in there. And that can happen with quality functions. It could happen with functionality. It could happen with time to market. So one organization where their time to market was they were going to launch in 3 months. And I said, well, that's not a lot of time to get stuff done. Don't worry about it. They always change it. You know?
Right.
And it becomes the subculture is, well, that's not important. Don't worry about that. And so it's part of the problem, I think, is that and we've talked about it before, is where there's things that are said because they should be said. Reliability is good, right? It's important to our customer,
right,
for example. Within the funding, the directions, the incentives to the key individuals that are making decisions may not be in alignment with that. And so it may be for some other sets of purposes. And all in the guise of it's good for business, it's what we want to do. Now, is that disconnect? Could that be a part of that cause that goes after this cultural piece that we're looking at is using the reliability activities rather than a get it off my plate checklist mode versus integrated into the decision making?
That's a symptom of a system that's not working.
Right.
You know, I don't think it's a cause. I think that's a symptom.
The checklist thing is a symptom. I agree. I'm thinking the misalignment of priorities. Or the inconsistency of priorities.
But we talk about whose priorities and when. It's not just, you know, it's not the organization as a whole, right? There's people own the business at the highest level. Their priorities are reliability is important and quality. They own this product for a long time, as opposed to the priorities of the, you know, design engineer, project manager, you know, lower level, you know, mid-level manager. They have different, you know, priorities. So those are all misaligned. So we've framed it pretty well. What are some brainstorming ideas regarding changing that, you know. And I gave the analogy before about a modeling shop, you know, a machine shop in-house. The modeling shop never pushes modeling and prototyping on the engineers. It's there because the engineers want to prototype because it helps their design process, and the modeling shop's measured on how well they help support that.
Mm-hmm. No, so, I mean, for me, that's clear, is that there's a value in getting a model made over, you know, in the next couple of days. And then it helps the design team answer specific questions. Say like an industrial design model shop can make five of those real quick, and they can put it in front of a handful of customers, and they can find out customers' reactions to an industrial design very quickly.
It wasn't done because the process said you need five prototypes. It was done because engineers or whoever said, we need a prototype. What do we think are some things that would switch reliability from that one to the other?
Well, break it down a little bit, Adam. Is the industrial design guy has got all these concepts, right? And he has to make a decision, which I think is the driving force to say, well, one way to help me make this decision of which industrial design we want to use is I'm going to go make models. That's a path to supporting making a decision. So from a reliability point of view, if I'm looking at these different design options, then some are lesser and some are more robust than the other ones. And part of that decision is, well, I want to pick, say, a vendor components. I want to pick the most reliable power supply for my application. I don't have a model shop I can walk into and in 2 days later get an answer. Right, it takes a little bit more forethought and planning, and well, what are the characteristics about, what's the failure mechanisms, what do I measure? Yet, if you have those tools available, where it could be a comparative halt test or a series of ALTs or data analysis, there's many paths to answer that question. But it's fun to walk into the model shop. I'm sorry.
But
go talk to a statistician. It's not so much fun. Come on.
But here's the thing, though, is that that's the thing, is that the driving force, right? It wasn't because the model shop's fun. It is fun, but it's not why. The why was they have a goal they're trying to accomplish, and they believe this will help them get to it.
Right. It adds value to their decision-making process.
Yeah. So one of two things are missing if the model shop business is dropping. If the model shop business is dropping, one or two things are happening. One, people don't have a goal that the model shop can help with. Or two, they don't think any of the tools in the model shop, you know, can accomplish that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, an example would be that if you all of a sudden, you know, if for some reason CAD modeling and FEA, finite element analysis, and all these simulation things became so amazingly good, and in virtual reality, you can see things in real life.
And touch them.
If all those things became so good, now all of a sudden the model shop would lose, you know, value because it doesn't have, you know, what they want.
Right.
The other thing would be that if, you know, let's say all that wasn't the case and prototyping was still very important, maybe this, you know, the model shop might lose business because the results of what they make doesn't serve the purpose. Like if you can only machine things out of wood, and that makes it hard to do any kind of testing, or, you know, you need waterproof plastic or something, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. So those are the two reasons why it wouldn't have value. So what is it with reliability? Is it that nobody believes these tools actually help, or is it that nobody really sees it needs what those tools provide? I think it's the latter. I think that they don't have a personal goal that these tools are going to provide an answer that helps them.
I'm total agreement with you there, Adam, is that if I don't hit reliability, one, the data is so sparse and so uncertain that nobody's going to really question me when I say, well, I don't know if it's good enough or not. You push the risk up the decision chain.
You're long gone. You're on a different project.
Well, you're on a different project. It's hard to measure even when it gets in the field. A lot of times, if the organization is already struggling with reliability, it has to be a pretty major problem.
Here's my favorite one. Wait, but here's my favorite one. It's not that you're long gone. My favorite one is you're long gone. It blows up in the field. You get called back to help because you know the design best, and then you get rewarded for fixing it. well, the problems you cause. That's my favorite one.
Yeah. Well, that happens in organization. And people don't consciously do this, I don't believe. But the perception is, well, that's not the priority. My priority is add these extra 10 features, not get the other 10 working perfectly. And there's too many excuses that are viable. Oh, that's a corner case. Oh, it's uncertain. We're going to take the risk. Oh, that's, you know, we'll make it up in manufacturing or whatever. Or my favorite is software will fix it. But you're right. Is the reward system is that the hero comes in and they get the new parking spot, they get a company car, they get a promoter, they get the attaboys because they fix something. Whereas if you would have done it right from the start, it's it goes unknown. It goes invisible in so many organizations. But the original program had a goal. You know, they want it to be this customer requirement of being a certain reliability and durability. We knew the environment. We knew where it goes. There's plenty of people in organizations that care about reliability. It gets down into, it's hard to measure on a day-to-day ongoing basis. And the other part is that the value of, say, an FMEA or an ALT, and if they're not intricately connected to decision-making, are really hard to quantify their value. Just doing an FMEA has little to no value in and of itself. The results can have dramatic value to an organization. Yet, shaving a week off of the ramp in production, I can measure that today. I can estimate it today, where it's much more squishy for the reliability stuff.
Here's the hard thing for reliability, that you can actually cut. One of the things that actually does get cut very quickly is the measurement mechanism. So now mm-hmm. you're flying blind. Mm-hmm. So with things like finite element analysis, if you're doing it, let's say for structural, if you know you find out that it breaks, like the product will break. You know, you will find out it wasn't strong enough. We mm-hmm. should have done. You know, you will find out. The thing is with reliability is that as far as finding out what happens in the field, that's pretty far out. So the way you find out during development or right at release is you do measurement programs like system reliability growth and stuff like that, which then measure, okay, we're good or we're not. And you can cut that out and then you can't measure it. So then, you know, you don't find out till a year later. So that's the difference, is that whether or not you do an FEA model, it's going to break in front of you, you know, whereas you can actually put your hand over your eyes and just, you know, ignore the reliability and it won't show up for a while. So it's kind of it's like not changing.
That touches on something that I think is going to be related to what we're talking about. Is I just wrote an outline or an abstract for a webinar I'll do in August, I think it is August or September, for the Ascendo Reliability Program. And it's I'm titling it The Fundamentals of Reliability Risk. And so a lot of what we're talking about is that I think if we can quantify the risk in a way that enables us to make good decisions around it. One is just identify what are all the risks. It's not just change and failure rate. There's plenty of other things that the reliability program exposes as risks to an organization. But if we can identify and quantify those things, it's one way to make those things tangible, such that it becomes a decision, part of the decision process. And then I think it's the culture, the reward system, in a large part in an organization. If there's no reward for understanding and solving real risks to the performance of a product in the field, it doesn't matter what we say. I don't know how many times I said, well, let me put the big hat on now and let's think about this from a customer's point of view or from a market share point of view or whatever. And most of the design teams I work with are like, I need to deliver this next week. I don't have time to think big. I need to get this bracket right.
Right. So the whole system's but the whole system's broken if that's what's going on. It's not their fault. The system's just broken. You for them to, because go back to that startup. Would anybody in that startup say that?
No.
You gave a startup example because they have ownership of the whole thing. They know that who cares if the bracket's right if 20% of them are going to fail in the field. They know that they're going out of business. So that condition doesn't need to be fixed. That's so just a symptom.
Part of it is I think the reliability groups can enable the quantification, the value of these different tools and tasks and help the, in inoculated into an organization so people recognize. And you've seen this where organizations explore, said, well, this HALT idea sounds good. Let's try it, right? And they go off and do run a couple of experiments and goes, wow, that was useful. Let's do that. And their product gets more robust. It improves. And they go, wow, this is great. We need to do more HALT. What they miss is the circumstances under which you use it change. And so it's not always a valuable tool to use. It is oftentimes, but not always. And it's that piece that I think us as the reliability folks don't include a lot of times. We're just happy they did HALT once because it was really desperately needed on that program. And then it gets away and then it loses its value. Same with FMEA. There's times and places where that's a critical tool. And there's other times when it's arguable whether it's useful or not. So I think part of our role is making sure that it's the value proposition for the proposals and the achieved value are documented. And that just goes into reinforcing the management team and the culture, more importantly, about why and when we use these tools in the various activities. I don't know that that's the whole solution, but I think if we don't put it into real numbers, and I use the very simple example of procurement where they want to do a cost reduction and it's going to change a failure rate to a component. And one piece of their equation missing is, well, what's the cost per failure and the marginal increase in warranty expenses because they saved a nickel on this component. And that equation is not difficult, yet that piece of information of what's the cost per failure is often missing from organizations. It's just not readily available. And so it can be very sophisticated models and algorithms to use that information. But if I know that I'm selling a product for $100 and every failure costs me $500, and I can translate that to cost per unit shipped, right? Now it's in the same units as the bill of material costs. Now, procurement and your design team can make decisions about, do I spend a nickel on this component and save a dollar or not? Mm-hmm. thing per unit. Sometimes it's as little things like that that enable the thinking process of what I truly believe most people want to do right anyway. They just need the extra little pieces to enable them to have those discussions and make those decisions. And then it's a reinforcing piece that we play as the reliability professionals is, this is why we do it. And this is why it's the right tool for this circumstance. And this is the value, looking hindsight, this is the value we got from that. That's why we did it. And here's how much it quantifies out as a difference it actually make. We spend more time trying to get an extra sample rather than showing the value of having that extra sample.
Yeah.
So
I think we shared some good ideas. It's definitely a topic I'm sure we'll be talking about for a long time. And it's definitely very interesting. And I think I'm sure in every organization, there's a different type of solution to help change that shift, but it's about changing the natural forces in which way they're pushing more to be like that startup you described, right? That's kind of if you envisioned what it was like, even for an engineer and what they believe in or trying to drive towards, that startup is has the force direction that makes sense. So.
Well, yeah, I don't wish the insane hours and, too many things and no money. Bad pizza that goes with organizations. But
exactly.
But you're right. It's, and we've advocated it right from the start, is reliability is part of the design process. And it's how do you make it real so that it gets reinforced in a way that you do get the samples that you need to go do stuff, that kind of stuff. So, I think there's other ways to go about doing it. I'd be very interested in what our listeners are finding is helping to change the culture around how your organization views reliability. If it's more like that model shop where it's, well, we go there because they add value. Well, do you do reliability because it adds value? How do you do it?
Yeah. Well, good. Well, before we risk going over, it's obviously a topic we like because we definitely, we've run long on it. But I want to thank everybody for listening, and we definitely hope to see your comments.
Yeah.
And even feel free to contact us directly with questions. I love talking about this. And thank you for listening. And thanks, Fred, for taking time to chat about it.
No problem, man. Thanks.
Take care. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.